We're holding on the top of page Nun Beis of Brachos, the paragraphs marked Daf Gimel. For those using other editions, it would be the middle of Osayim Gimel, or the end of the very end of Osayim Gimel. Page Nun Beis. Yeah. So the Gemara has been talking about the last time we learned about a person finds Tsoya, where he's davening, and then in general, these couple of blocks of Gemara are talking about various things that are not supposed to be there when a person is davening, including Erva and Tsoya and so forth. So the Gemara says, Amar Shmuel ben Achmeni, Amar Rav Yonasan, Hanitzrach l'nekava, the person has to go to the bathroom, Harei Zalo Yispalel, and he's not allowed to daven at that point. Mishum Shanema, Hikun, Lekrasa, Lekracha Yisrael, because the pasuk says, prepare yourself to greet your God, Yisrael, and part of preparing yourself is to go to the bathroom ahead of time. We learned earlier in the Masech, actually, that when a person does in previous perek, that when a person does that, and then he says, Kriya Shema Mispalel, that he's doing a very great thing. So it's not just a nice thing to do, it's the actual halacha. Now, the author never discusses in Shulchan Aruch, it really depends how badly a person needs to go to the bathroom. If we're talking about that he'd be able to hold himself in without trouble, for more than a certain amount of time, and he doesn't really feel the need to push it out, then he's fine to daven at that point. So the Gemara continues. My dichtiv, what does the pasuk mean? This is also going to connect with what we said before about going to the bathroom before you daven. But first, we're going to bring a different explanation. The pasuk says shmur raglacha kasher telacha beis ha'lekim. The pasuk says, guard your feet when you go to the house of Hashem. And the pasuk continues, v'korev l'shmoya, and close to listen, mites haksilim zavach, more than the way the fools give or bring korbanos, ki einam yodim lasas ro, because they don't know how to do evil. So let's explain that pasuk phrase by phrase and understand what Shlomo HaMelech is telling us. The first words, shmoy raglecha kasher telecha besa l'kim, means shmur atzmacha, guard yourself, shaloi sechta, that you shouldn't do averus in the first place. That's the shmur raglacha. And then the v'im techta, but if you do wrong, tovi korban lefanai, then bring a korban. So that's the lalechas of beis ha'lekim. If you don't guard yourself from doing averus, you're going to wind up having to go to the beis mikdash to bring a korban. So try to avoid that in the first place. Then when the pasuk continues, the korev l'shmoya, you know, divrei chachamim, with actual words of the pasuk is mites haksilim zavach. When it says and close to listen more than when the fools bring a korban, so Rava says that part of the pasuk means heavy korev l'shmoya divrei chachamim. Take care to stay close to listen to the words of the chachamim. The Chachamim know that if a person does an Aveira, then he should bring a Korban and do Tshuva. So at least if a person is going to do an Aveira, then that's the next best thing. So Maharsha explains like this. Now the simple meaning of the Pasuk would be something like this. And this is how actually Rashi explains it on the Pasuk in Kehelis. What it means is, better that you should listen to Hashem rather than having to bring a Korban, because Hashem would prefer that you listen to Him rather than that you disobey Him and then bring Korbanos. We find a similar thing, for example, where Shmuel says to Shaul, after the whole story with Hamalek, he says to him, Achepa, when Shaul says, well, we kept the animals alive because we wanted to bring them as Korbanos, and Shmuel says, Achepa, Hashem la'olus izvachim tishmoya b'kreil Hashem, does Hashem want Korbanos as much as He wants you to listen to Him? So in the simple meaning, that is what the Pasuk means. However, Maharsha says, the Gemara is bothered by, what is the last part of the pasuk? Ki einam yodim lasas ra, they don't know to do evil, so what would that part mean? In fact, the Gemara itself is going to ask, what does that mean? If a person doesn't know how to do evil, that makes him a pretty good person. So therefore, that is why the Gemara is preferring to understand it somewhat differently. So the first part, yeah, is close to the pshat, that it means that be careful, don't do averus in the first place, and if you do, then the next best thing is to bring a korban. But in particular, the Gemara's understanding, the korev l'shmoya, does not mean that it's better to listen to Hashem in the first place. I mean, it does mean that, but here in the drasha of the Gemara, what it means is, at least if a person did an avera, then he should listen to what the Chachamim say, namely that they know when you bring a korban, it has to be accompanied by tshuva. Rather than mites haksilim, the pasuk continues, rather than the way that the fools bring a korban, namely, Shlomo is warning you, ba'al tehi haksilim, don't be like the foolish people, shechotin mevi'im korban, when they do an avera. They bring a korban, but ve'enos in tshuva. They don't do tshuva, so if you're going to bring a korban, at least do it like the way the chachamim do, rather than the way that the haksilim, the foolish people do. Then when the pasuk finishes off, ki einam yodim lasisra, when it says they don't know to do evil, so the question is, if they don't know to do evil, wouldn't that make them tzaddikim? Why are we calling them silim, and why are we saying don't be like that? Ella, what it means is, al tehi silim, it means don't be like the foolish people, shechotin mevim korban. Here, yes, they sin and they bring a korban, but ve'enam yodim imalak tova he mevim, ayal harah he mevim. They don't even realize whether what they're bringing is for good or for bad. They don't understand the motivation behind it, which means, Samar Shah says, Pashit means, what kind of korban they bring. So like this, for example, they did an Aveda, which should make them Chayev Chatas. They should be bringing a Chatas. Instead, these foolish people don't realize, and they think they're going to bring some other kind of korban, without realizing that the first thing is they need to bring a Chatas in order to be Mechaper for their Aveda. In fact, Api Alocha, you have, most of the time, when you have a Chatas and then an Oila being brought, first, many times you have a pair of Korbanos that have to be brought, a Chatas and an Oila, and the rule, nearly always, is that you bring a Chatas first, with the idea being that if a person has offended the king, first he has to get Mechila from the king. Only then is it appropriate to bring a present. So the same way, first the person needs the Chatas to clean up his Aveda, and then he needs an Oila as a present to get himself back in Hashem's good graces. Meanwhile, this seal, Marisho explains, doesn't even realize that. So he brings a korban, which is not even appropriate for his aveda. That's the Ke'enim Yerdim Lasasura. So they don't even know whether they bring it for good or for bad. Eitz Yosef makes a different point over here. He says like this, a person might be apt to think, you know what, actually my doing an aveda came out to actually have a very good consequence. I get to bring a korban. Where without that, I wouldn't have had the chance to bring the korban. So no, we're saying that don't think like that. Don't think that you can do badly and then that the result is that you're able to accomplish a mitzvah. That's not the right way to go through life. Interesting, there was in Nedarim, so it was not so long ago in Daf Yomi, because we're currently in Nedarim, that it mentioned that there were tzaddikim, who wanted to be able to bring a korban chatas, but how can they do that? You can't bring a chatas voluntarily, so what they would do sometimes is they would take on a neder of nazirus, and a nazir at the end of his nazirus has to bring a chatas, and that way they'd have an opportunity to bring a chatas. But so here, Eitz Yosef is saying, what the Gemara is warning us is that when a person brings a chatas because he's required to, because of an aveda, he's apt to think, you know what, after all, it was a pretty good thing that I did that aveda, and therefore Shlomo HaMelech is telling you don't think that. Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so it means that Shlomo explains, Hashem is saying, in effect, we're talking about people who don't even realize the difference between good and bad. They're bringing the wrong korban, like Marashah says, or they think that they actually accomplished something good, like Eitz Yosef says, and they're thinking they bring a korban before me. I don't like such korban. So that's what Shlomo is warning us about in this passage. And the Gemara continues, Omer of Asi, or of Ashi, v'itemer of Chanin of Papa Omer, another meaning of the Pasuk, Shmur Raglecha, Kasha Telecha, Besa Lekim, means Shmur Nekavecha, watch your orifices, which are between a person's feet. When you're standing and davening before Hashem, in particular, be careful, a person needs to be careful that at that time he shouldn't be passing gas or anything like that. So, raglacha, in other words, the word raglayim in Lashon Kodesh means both feet and legs. So therefore, it can mean shmo raglacha, can mean be careful about what's in the area of your legs, namely the nekavim over there, and be careful that you're clean, and be careful that you're clean and nothing untoward happens while you're davening. So according to that, Beis HaElokim doesn't just mean the Beis HaMikdash. Like in the first explanation, it means a shul when you're davening to Hashem. Continues the Gemara, further on this topic about Erva, when we've been talking about Soya, when a person is davening. So now the Gemara digresses to talk about Dinim of Erva, what you're allowed and not allowed to have around when you're saying Shema or Shemana Esrei. So the Gemara says, Amar Yitzchak of Tefach Be'isha Erva. A Tefach exposed of a woman is considered Erva. And you wouldn't be allowed to say Shema or Shemana Esrei or anything like that in the presence of it. So, we haven't gotten to that point yet. First, we have to figure out what he means when he says Tefach Be'isha Erva. Eventually, that's what we're going to explain, that's what it means. But first, the Gemara says Lamai. As far as what are we saying that it's considered Erva? Ilema Le'istakuliba. Do we mean that you're not allowed to look at such a Tefach? Well, you don't need that. Even less than a Tefach is a problem. If we're talking about a woman as an Eshes Ish or otherwise an Erva. V'ha'amr of Sheshes, because of Sheshes explains, Lama mona hakosiv tachshitin shebachutz im tachshitin shebefnim, by the story of the war of Midian, at the end of the war against Midian, in Parshas Matos, at the end of it, there it describes how the officers of the army came and brought to Moshe and to Elazar all the gold jewelry that they had captured in the war. And they want to bring it as a gift to the Beis Mikdash. And the reason is, you know, the Gemara explains in some other places, Rashi brings it on the pasuk, because they were concerned about hirhuri avera that they had during the war. They're capturing all these Bnei Smidyan, and they're capturing all the jewelry that they wore, so therefore they're concerned that they may have had thoughts of znus in that connection. Now, the pasuk lists all the jewelry that they brought, and it mentions different kinds, choch, banezem, and it mentions something called a kumaz. So now, some of these things, like a choch, for example, is a nose ring or an earring or something. So that a woman wears on the outside of her body. Then on the other hand, together with that, the pasuk is mentioning a kumaz, which is something that's worn b'fnim. Rashi describes that, so on the pasuk, Rashi just says it's first shall beis harechem. It's a piece of jewelry made in the shape of the beis harechem, of a woman's private parts. So over there on the pasuk, Rashi doesn't explain what it means. Here he explains that they sort of like the way a woman pierces her ears to put in jewelry over there, to put in earrings. Similarly, they would have piercings in that area and put on this kind of thing, and that they would use it so that way they can control who they're going to be having relations with. The point is, that's the kind of jewelry that's worn in a very private area of the body. So why is the pasuk mentioning that in the same breath as things like a choch or a nezem, which are earrings or finger rings or things like that are worn on the outside, on the exposed parts of the body? So loy malach, it comes to teach you, kol ha'mistakel be'etzba k'tana shel isha, if a man looks and he wants to have hana, even from the little finger of a woman who is also to him, it's as if he's looking at the unclean area, at her private part. So in other words, therefore, the pasuk puts them all together. So the officers are explaining to Moshe that not only is there jewelry over here that's very intimate, but there's also jewelry that's on the outside. We think that during the war, we may have looked at the fingers and whatever and the ears of the Bnei Smidyan and had to hear him from that. And therefore, we want to take all the jewelry, what was on the inside and what was on the outside, and bring it all as a korban to the Beis Mikdash on our behalf. So we see, in other words, that far less than a tefach, an etzba k'tana is much smaller than a tefach, and we're still saying that a man's not allowed to look at it. So ela be'ishto l'krishma. So rather, this business about a tefach refers to his own wife and as far as krishma. So even though he has the right to see uncovered areas of his wife's body, but during krishma, not a tefach that's uncovered is off limits for that purpose. And there is a good deal of discussion among the poskim about certain ins and outs of that. For what it is basically you have three different categories of areas of the body that they talk about in connection with these halachas and shulchan aruch. You have areas that are normally everybody keeps uncovered, the face, the hands, for example. So those there's no issue, even though they're much larger than a tefach. Then you have areas that are always supposed to be kept covered. So those, not only a tefach, but even less than those might be a problem. And then you have areas that in some places they cover, and in other places they don't cover, and that's when you have this issue if in this place they're normally covered, and then you have the tefach business. And you have details about it. There are poskim who say that would apply, that even the dispensation for a tefach is only with his own wife, with another woman, as we're saying, because of the etzba k'tana that we're saying over here, maybe even less than a tefach would be a problem. There's a discussion of, is this that you're not allowed to even look at it, or only that you're not allowed to gaze at it? There's the question, for example, if a person is in the presence of that and he closes his eyes, is that good enough, or does he have to turn around in a different direction? So you have various dinim that are discussed about it in the Shulchan Aruch. Anyway, the Gemara continues. Amar Rav Chista, shoik be'isha erva. The shoik of a woman is considered erva. Now, there are two explanations of what part of the shoik is definitely part of the leg, but what part? So you have different poskim talk about, does it mean the upper leg or the lower leg? So the part down to the knee or the part below the knee? So there are proofs in both directions, which one is which. this is why you have in most kehillos, you have kind of a compromise in that since we're saying shoyt be'isha erva, then therefore, so they wear skirts till down below the knee in order to be choshish for that opinion, and then they wear tights or whatever to cover to tights or stockings to cover the lower leg to be choshish for the opinion that the shoyt means the lower leg. So now, when we're saying over here shoyt be'isha erva, one point of it is that the post can say. It means that so Eitz Yosef brings from the poskim a couple of possibilities about it. One point is, even though men, if we assume that shoik means the lower leg, men often have that exposed. Men often go around barefoot or with shorts or whatever, and therefore their lower legs are exposed, and by them it's not considered a problem. So you would think maybe for a woman it isn't either, and therefore we're saying that it is. Another point is also that we're saying, even though we just said only tefach v'isha erva, but the shoik, because it leads to her hurim, therefore it's a problem even less than a tefach exposed. So you have the different opinions about it. So Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Gali Shoik Ivri Naharis, there's a pasuk, there's a perek in Yeshaya, a short nevuah about Bavel, about how Bavel was compared up until now to a queen. She was the leading empire, the superpower of that time, and then Bavel was going to be conquered and taken over and humiliated by Paras Amadai, and so the Navi compares her to a queen or a princess that now is humiliated and taken captive and forced to do hard work and wade through rivers and whatever, and then go into Golis. So he uses the expression Gali Shoik, uncover your leg, Ivri Naharis, cross rivers, Uchtiv, and the next pasuk continues, Tigol Ervasech, your nakedness will be uncovered, Begam Teirach Pasech, and your humiliation will be seen. So we see that the pasuk is saying that uncovering the Shoik is a form of Erva. That's what we mean when we say shoyt be'isha erva. So the shoyt, no, berach would be the knee, but so that's the thing. You have two different understandings of what part of the leg is called shoyt. Is it the upper leg from the thigh down to the knee, or is it the lower part from the knee down to the ankle? So you have different posting about it, which is like I said, why you have the minute. So in some places they have the minute that women wear skirts or dresses all the way down to the ankle, because they hold that shoik is the lower leg, and therefore that's it. But in most of the frum world, they do kind of this compromise of skirts still below the knee, and then tights or stockings below that. So about karbonis, it means the upper leg. One thing you have to remember, though, is by animals' legs have three segments. Humans' legs have only two. An animal with an animal, you have the upper segment corresponds to a human thigh, the lower one corresponds to the human shin, the lower one, and then you have the third one below that, which actually corresponds to a human being's palm of their hand. A kosher animal, in effect, walks on its tiptoes. So therefore, so yeah, with a kosher animal, you could say the shoik is the middle part, but now translating that to a human, does that mean the lower part of the leg, or does it mean the upper part? So you could look at it either way. So like I said, you know, you do have different poskim on different sides of the issue, what part is considered the shoyt for this purpose. The kainim, when they got the chaz of a shoyt of an animal, yeah. So Ben Tzion was pointing out, shoyt means the upper part of the leg. But the difference is that the upper part of a leg in an animal is not necessarily what corresponds to the upper part of a leg in a person. It may correspond to the lower part. So you have different ways of understanding it. Okay, the Gemara says another one. Omer Shmuel, koil be'isha erva. A woman's voice is considered erva. Now, we mean her singing voice primarily. So it means the same kind of thing, that when a woman is singing, then a man's not allowed to be saying Kriyishma. One thing it does mention out, the Rebbe does mention in Shulchan Aruch, if the person is not really paying attention to it at all, then there may be a certain heter for it. Chenema, ki koilich oriv umarech nove, as we find in Shir Hashirim, in part of the praise that the doid, the beloved says to the raya, to the woman whom he loves, which is the metaphor for the Jewish people, for Hashem and the Jewish people, he says the expression, your voice is sweet and your appearance is beautiful. So just like a woman's appearance can be considered erva, so is her voice. So therefore, that's a koil de isha erva. Amr of Sheshes, in this connection, also Seir Be'isha Erva. A woman's hair, her uncovered hair, is considered Erva. Shenema, because you have another one, Sheshidim. Sarech Ke'edu Ha'izim, part of the praise that he says over there to Knesset Yisrael, to the Jewish people personified as a woman, your hair is like a flock of goats. I mean, in other words, it actually explains on the Pasuk over there, goats are usually black, so like her hair cascades and waves down her head like the way goats are streaming down a mountainside. The point is, in other words, again, it's praising the appearance of her hair and saying how attractive it is, and therefore that's also considered Erva. So now one thing is, you know, I mean, in Shulchan Aruch it mentions that would apply only to the hair of a married woman because she has a requirement, afi alacha, to cover it. It wouldn't apply to the hair of an unmarried girl because she has no requirement to cover it, afi alacha. The interesting thing in that regard is there's discussion. First of all, the Aruch HaShulchan makes an interesting point. He says that nowadays, and he's talking over 100 years ago, it had unfortunately become very common that married Jewish women do not cover their hair in many places. He was living in Eastern Europe in Litter, whatever, late 18, early 1900s, and already in his times, people were starting to fall down as far as that. So he argues maybe in that case, then it's not considered erva anymore. Maybe it would be considered more like a face or the hands or whatever. It's common enough now not to be covered for it not to be considered erva anymore. So not everybody agrees with that, but Rav Moshe does have a tshuva on the related subject. What about a goyish woman? What about a goyish married woman's hair? And he explains that what our Gemara, when it calls it erva, is not saying, unlike, for example, tepach v'isha and shoik and whatever, the hair is in a certain sense not intrinsically erva. We see, after all, that an unmarried girl doesn't have to cover it, whereas she does have to cover the other parts of her body that needs to be covered. So we see it's not intrinsically that an erva, but more just that a married Jewish woman has a requirement, afi alacha, to cover it. So therefore, now a goita does not have such a requirement. Therefore, he argues that maybe we can say there's no problem saying Krishma and Dvorim Shivat Dusha or whatever in the presence of a goisha married woman's hair because it's not, they don't cover it anyway. Maybe, I guess, in places, I guess like if you were in some of these Muslim countries where they do, then maybe you'd have an issue if you see it uncovered. I don't know, but not in Western society where they don't. Okay. Further on, the Gemara talks about various dinim involving tefillin. What if a person, I remember in those days, they wore tefillin all day long, so you could have sometimes a person is wearing tefillin and he has a need to go to the bathroom. And it wouldn't be, you know, they didn't have indoor bathrooms like we do now. It would be someplace, it would be an outhouse, it would be someplace on a street corner or whatever, so you'd have to have someplace to safely put your tefillin in between. So the Gemara has a whole sugya on the subject of the dinim of what you can do with the tefillin in that. So now, the Gemara mentions, in that regard, it mentions that one of the Chachamim says that I once saw Rebbe hanging his tefillin. And the question is, the Gemara says, HaTolat tefillah yitolu loichaya, you learn in a braisa that if a person hangs his tefillin, then his life will be hanging, his life will be in suspense. Habonah, at the bottom of the page over here, says, listen, you know, tefillin represent the main concept of Amunah, because after all, they contain the basic concept of Amunah in Hashem. So, the same way as a person, now the word tolerate, besides meaning hanging or suspended, can also mean like in suspense, like a person is not sure about. A person can't be in suspense about, do I believe in these things that it says in the tefillin or not? That's not, you can't live that way. And the same way the Chazal are representing that point by saying that you can't hang your tefillin. So the Gemara continues, Dorshe Chamurais Amru, those who darshan Chamurais say, now the word Chamurais has a couple of meanings. It can mean, literally, the word Choymer is related to an Aramaic word meaning a knot. So it can mean people who darshan naughty, complicated things in Torah and were able to explain the reasons behind them. It can also mean, the word choymer can also mean a diamond or a jewel. So it means people who would darshan the jewel-like teachings of Torah and explain to us the horoids from them. Rashi has another gusa, doshe reshumais, which means the things that are marked in the Torah, but not said clearly. They're only hints, and they would douch in them and explain them. Anyway, they said when the pasuk says v'hoyu chayecha tzluim l'chami neged, when it says in the toichacha, your life will be in suspense opposite you, meaning a person won't know from one day to the next whether he's going to be alive the next day. Zehat toilah tefilah. That is hinting at a person who hangs his tefillin, so he hangs them on a peg. Rashi gives the example. The post can say also it means, for example, that the person holds the tefillin, the shel rosh, let's say, by the knot and lets the bais hang downward. So his life will be hanging. So the question is, the Gemara says, so what do you mean that Rebbe was hanging his tefillin? And the Gemara goes through a couple of possibilities, and it finally concludes that what it was is it means he would hang the tefillin bag on a nail. There's no problem doing that. You're allowed to hang the tefillin bag on a nail, but you're not allowed to hang the tefillin themselves. You're not allowed to hold onto the kesher and let the bias hang downward, or anything like that. The Gemara continues, getting back to this matter of a person's body being clean when he's davening. The Gemara says, Rab Abba have a kamishtamit mineder of Yehuda. Rab Abba was trying to avoid Rab Yehuda. To have a boil mesek la eretz la Eretz Yisrael, Rab Abba wanted to make aliyah. He wanted to go up to Eretz Yisrael, and he knew the Amr of Yehuda kol olam bavel Eretz Yisrael over be'eser. He knew that Rab Yehuda says anybody who leaves Bavel and moves to Eretz Yisrael is over on a mitzvah saseh. Shenema, because the pasuk says, which is at the end of Ksubas, so also not so long ago in Daf Yomi, Bavelo Yuvahu, they shall be brought to Bavel. Now the context, the pasuk is actually talking about the clay shoris, the kalim of the Beis Mikdash. Yirmiyahu is telling the Jewish people, you have false Nevi'im who are claiming that the kalim that Nebuchadnezzar took so far, that he took some of the kalim 11 years before the Churban, when he brought Yechoniah into Golos, and that's when the Chodesh V'Amaskel, the great time of the Chachamim, were taken into Golos at that time. So Yirmiyahu is saying, you have false Nevi'im who are claiming that those Kalim are coming back to Yerushalayim very soon. Yirmiyahu says, on the contrary, there's going to be a Churban and all the remaining Kalim that are currently in Yerushalayim are going to be taken to Babel. And he continues, which is, so in context, it's talking about the Kalim, but Rabbi Yehuda understands it to be hinting at the people as well. And he continues, the Navi continues, Vashama Yiyu, there they shall remain. Ad yoim pokdiosim, until the day that I remember them and I tell them that it's time and I decide that it's time to go. Nu'um Hashem, so says Hashem. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda said that if a person then moves from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, he's over on that. So now Rabbi Abba wanted to move to Eretz Yisrael, and therefore he was trying to avoid Rabbi Yehuda, because if he meets up with Rabbi Yehuda, who was his Rebbe, then Rabbi Yehuda is going to ask him, so Rabbi Abba, what are your plans? And he's going to end up telling him, and then Rabbi Yehuda is going to tell him, don't go. What is Taka the problem, according to the Yehuda, going from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael? So actually, there's different opinions of Rishonim about that, and there was a sicha where the Rebbe analyzes this in some detail. Rashi over there in Ksubas says the vote is because in Bavel there were great yeshivas. There was also the Shekhinah rested there in certain places in Bavel. So therefore you couldn't leave Bavel for Eretz Yisrael. On the other hand, the Rambam mentions this halacha, and he doesn't give a reason. He just says you're not allowed to go from Bavel to any other country, which the Kesef Mishnah says. He doesn't explicitly say Eretz Yisrael, but the implication is he means Eretz Yisrael as well. So there's a sicha where the Rebbe analyzes it in some detail and explains that the vort is, according to Rashi, the reason why Rabbi Yehuda is saying not to go is because of the great yeshivas in Bavel. Implying, so when the time comes, there aren't great yeshivas in Bavel anymore, then Bavel is no different than any other country. Whereas the Rambam, who's not making any such distinction, so the Rebbe explains that what it is just in a certain sense, the same way as Eretz Yisrael is the Eretz HaNivcheres, is the land that Hashem chose that it should be the inheritance of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and of the Jewish people. In a certain similar sense, Hashem chose that Bavel should be the country of the Golos of the Jewish people. And until that's changed, until that's rescinded, then Rabbi Yehuda is saying a Yid is not allowed to leave Babel, because that would be going against. Hashem decided that the Jewish people are supposed to be there, and this person is going against it. So Rabbi Abba wanted to go to Eretz Yisrael, and therefore he's avoiding Rabbi Yehuda. Omar, but Rabbi Abba says to himself, Ezel v'eshma minein bilsa, let me at least go and hear one last teaching of Torah from Rabbi Yehuda. The Ossi, or me base vader, I'll hear the Ossi and then I'll go. Or me base vader, let me hear one thing in the base avad in the yeshiva. The Hodder Afik, and then I'll leave. Ozel, so sort of Abba went, Ashbuchel the Tana. He found a Tana, we mean a Tana as in the kind who would repeat by heart Mishnayas and Brises in the yeshiva, and then the Chacham would discuss them. So the Tana, the Katoni, Kamed Rav Yehuda, he was teaching the following Brise in front of Rav Yehuda. Hoya over the tefillah, suppose a person is standing and davening, Shemana Esrei that is, v'nis atish, and in the middle, he passes gas. So then, mamtin actually yichlo haruach. So then he should wait until the smell dissipates, but chuvachozer mispal, and then he continues from an esrei. He can't be continuing to daven while there's that smell in the air. Ikadamri, and then another version of the braisa went as follows. Hoya omid b'tfila, the person is standing there and davening, ubikish lehis atish, and he feels the need to pass gas. So we're talking about, in other words, not he can't hold it in. It's too much, and he's going to have to do it. So what should he do? Marchuk la'achav dalad amas. So the braisa says he should move backwards 4 amas. So that way he's not in the set. That way when he returns now the reason why he should go backwards, there's a few different reasons. Eitz Yosef brings from Rishonim a couple of different reasons why Dafka backwards. One point is that ultimately he's going to have to return to where he was davening before. Or at least it should be that he's going to be facing, he may not return to the same place, but at least he's going to continue davening facing the same place where he was before. So if he goes forward, then, and he stays there, then he's not going to be facing where he was. So it's not the right thing to do. That's Rabbeinu Yonah. Then he brings from, then the Beis Yosef brings a different reason from Rabbi Yitzchak Abohav. That the idea is, which are not necessarily that he can't go forward, but practically speaking, the person is supposed to daven in front of the wall, and therefore he doesn't with the wall right in front of him, so he doesn't have any room to go forward. There are other points. He mentions another point over there that you don't want to be standing in the place where the smell is most powerful. But there's another point also that I've mentioned in Shulchan Aruch, because ultimately you're going to be returning to where you davened before. If you move to the side or something, then it's like you're completely breaking off your Shemoneh Esrei. Whereas if you move backwards and you still see the place where you were davening before, then at least it's not like you're completely breaking off your Shemoneh Esrei. So he does that. So he moves 4 amas backwards, umis atish, then he passes the gas, umamtin at sheyichla haruach, he waits until the smell dissipates, v'chozer umispalel, then before he continues with davening, v'chozer umispalel, there are different reasons, there are different explanations among the Rishonim, whether chozer means that he actually returns to where he was standing before, or whether it just means he continues davening in the new place where he's standing now. Anyway, but before he continues davening, Ba'oimo, he says, Ribbono Shel Olam, Yitzartonu Nekovim Nekovim, Hashem, you made us with many holes, with many orifices in our body, Chalulim Chalulim, with many hollow areas in our bodies, like stomach and whatever, Goli V'yadu L'Fanecha, Cherposenu Uplimosenu, it's known, it's well revealed and known before you, our embarrassment and our humiliation, V'chayenu, while we're alive, U'v'achrisenu, and also after we're gone, Rima V'seleya, we're worms and maggots. So in other words, the person is like excusing himself with this tefillah. It wasn't appropriate for me to do this during Shemoneh Esrei, but I have a body and I couldn't help it, basically. And then he continues from an esrei from where he broke off. Now, by the way, this halacha is brought in Shulchan Aruch, the tefillah and all. However, the Alter Rebbe says in practice we don't see people doing it nowadays. And he brings from the Trumas Hadeshin, which in turn is brought by the Rama, that this would only apply if a person is davening in private. If a person is davening in shul, it would be tremendous humiliation for him in front of everybody to be moving 4 amas backwards. And so therefore, you don't have to move the 4 amas backwards. You know, if you're not moving the 4 amas, you don't have to say the tefillah either. So then you wait, as the first braisa said, you just wait until the smell goes away, and then you continue Shemoneh Esrei. No, because so the point is, it says in Shulchan Aruch, once you've already had to interrupt, normally it would be, of course, you're not allowed to say just any old bakasha in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei. But here, where your Shemoneh Esrei is necessarily interrupted because of this anyway, then already you can further interrupt by saying this paragraph before you continue. But again, in Shulchan Aruch, it says, Lamaisi, you don't see people doing it because mostly people dive in the shul, and it would be tremendously embarrassing for a person in front of a whole kehila to be moving backwards in the middle of the Shemoneh Esrei. Everybody would know what happened, and therefore you don't do it. So that's the thing. So what it says in Shulchan Aruch, because you don't move the 4 amas because of the humiliation, therefore you don't say the tefillah either. You just wait until the smell of the gas dissipates, and then you continue down. Yeah. Omerle, sort of Abba says to the Tana, Ilu le bossi el l'shmoya dover zeh, if I had come to the Beis Medrash only to hear this one teaching, dai, it would have been enough for me. And then he left to move to Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara continues discussing this whole matter of, another point the Gemara discusses in this whole matter of tsoya and bad smells and things like that in connection with Kriya Shema and Tefillah. So the Gemara mentions the question, what if you're going through a Mavri Hamatuna? If you're going through a side alley or a side street that's dirty, that has tsoya, that has excrement or other smelly things in it. What are the dinim in terms of, would you be allowed, let's say, to cover your mouth and continue saying Shema while you're walking through such an area? So the Gemara mentions that Rav Chista in particular says you're not. And the Gemara says, Tanya Kabaseh de Rav Chista. We learn a braisa like what Rav Chista says. You're not allowed to do that. That if a person is walking in a filthy alley, so filthy for this purpose means that it has soya or meiraglayim in it, urine or excrement. And by the way, the Gemara discusses, we don't necessarily mean animal excrement, for example, unless it smells really bad. Primarily, we're talking about human waste. With animal waste in general, it's not an issue unless it's from certain kinds of creatures whose waste smells very bad. There are any other one if it smells bad. But Lamosho, for example, you're walking down the street, you see dog you see dog leavings or whatever. Lobbed after, is that a problem? So if a person is walking in such a place, loyik of Krishma, he's not allowed to say Krishma while he's walking in such a place. Even if, and then Eitz Yosef brings that a number of the Rishonim have the girsa, even if he's covering his mouth with his hand. Not only that, if a person was saying Shema, and then he walks into one of these Mavoyos HaMatunafos, Poisik, then he has to interrupt his Shema and wait until he's out of that area. And then you have Dinim and Shulchan Aruch that talk about what if the amount of time that he was walking through there is long enough that he could have finished the whole Krishma during that time, then in certain cases, then he has to actually start over. You have certain dinim, when a person interrupts Krishma for certain purposes, then if it shocked, if Ligmaris Kula, if it took him long enough that he could have said the entire Krishma during that time, then he has to start over. So Ligmar says, Loid Posach Mai. Now what happens if a person does not interrupt Shema and he continues saying it as he's walking through this filthy alley? So Ligmar says, Omer of Miyasha, Babrede, Rabbi Shulam Levi, all of our Kosev Omer, and such a person, the Pasuk says, "V'gamanina sati lahem chukim loytovim." Hashem says about the Jewish people, "I have given them laws that are no good, umishpatim bal yichu behem, and rules which they can't live through." So, what are we talking about? Is Hashem saying that He gave us a Torah that's no good and that we can't live with? No. What it means is, in other words, Hashem gave us mitzvahs that should be good for us and to give us life. So now when the person is doing the mitzvah in an inappropriate way, in a place that's aser, then on the contrary, he ends up getting punished for it, and therefore, in effect, the mitzvah for him was not such a good thing. Rav Asi brings a different pasuk in this connection. The Navi criticizes the people. Hoi, woe, moshchei oven b'chavei ashav. The people who pull along oven, averus, with ropes of emptiness. So Rashi explains, chavle ashav means ropes that are very easily snapped. So to say, in other words, imagine a person takes a very weak rope, which could easily, it would be so easy to snap it, and he uses it, and instead he doesn't snap it, and instead he schleps bad onto himself, the same way this person so easily, could have so easily stopped saying Shema in this Mavri HaMatunaf, and he didn't, and therefore he's schlepping evil onto himself with chavle ashav, where it would have been so easy for him to stop, just like it would have been so easy to cut the rope. Tosfos brings a different explanation that shav means for nothing, b'chinam. So they're bringing oven, they're bringing averus on themselves for nothing. Again, the idea is it would have been so easy for them to not do that just by stopping. Rav Adav Ava brings a third pasuk. Kidvan Hashem bazim. The pasuk says the person mocked the word of Hashem, and then it says there were severe consequences. So again, the idea is a person is saying Shema in such a place, like he's showing that Hashem's word doesn't mean much to him, that he's saying it in such a filthy place. So the Gemara finishes off the pasuk maskar, right? Okay, if he does interrupt, then what is his schar? We're talking about all the negative consequences for not interrupting. So now meruba midah tova, Hashem's midah of kindness is greater. So what's the schar? For this, the pasuk says, with this dover, where the word dover literally means for this word, meaning this speech, for that tarichu yamim, you will live long. So his schar because he interrupts at a time like that will be that he lives long. In fact, Meshech Chochma has an interesting explanation on this pasuk. The beginning of that pasuk says, "Ki lo dover reichu mikem." The Torah is not an empty thing from you. So in other words, so does that mean, so that would mean a person always has to have Torah with him. A person, the same way as a person always has to have life with him. You can never give up your life, and then continue to live afterwards the same way you shouldn't be able to give up Torah. Yet Hashem is telling us, through Chazal, that you do have to sometimes stop when you're in a mulvey, I'm a turnip, or a bathroom, or a bathhouse, or whatever. So therefore, the Torah is promising you, don't worry, in a case like that, do interrupt from it, take a break from the life of Torah for a little bit, and because of that, tarichu yom. Okay, Yom Yom Mashiach Ba'ola, Chof Cheshvan, the birthday of the Rebbe Rashab. So the Rebbe Rashab writes in one of his Maimorim, we know there are Ramach Mitzvahs Eser, and it says in Tzfarim that the Ramach Mitzvahs Eser correspond to the 248 limbs of the body. So now, the chayus of a person's body in general, and specifically of each of the Evorim, comes as drawn from a lakus. Every limb, by doing a mitzvah, and through the mitzvah, which is a lakus, so there's drawn into it chayus. So from that Evor lives. When Mashiach comes, then we'll see openly how the chayus of the limbs of the body is from a lakus. Halachas. So yesterday I wasn't here. I understand that we started talking about the dinim of bread that was fried, for example, French toast or things like that. So it's still considered bread as long as the pieces are larger than a kazayas, or as long as they stick together and they still look like bread. So now the Alter Rebbe explains in Shulchan Aruch, he says, even if, so you have, let's say, for example, you put bread into soup and it dissolves over there, even if it didn't completely dissolve, but they started out less than a kazayas, then a baal nefesh should be machmer to only, today sviya, only during a meal of bread. So now, what if you didn't cook the bread at all? You just poured hot gravy or hot soup on them. Then you have a suffix bracha, because of that considered bishul for now. So such a thing, you should only eat during the suddah. The altar never adds the detail, only if they still look like bread. If you didn't cook them at all, you just soak them in liquid or soup or whatever, the pieces are not a kazayas in size, then it depends whether they still look like bread or not. If they still look like bread, then they have the full din of bread, so you'd have to wash for them. If they don't look like bread anymore, then you don't have the din of bread, and then even if you ate today's sviya, then you just say mizonis and alamichir. One point is that if the liquid itself changes color because of the bread that's in it, then you know already the bread has dissolved enough to the point that's not considered Torah lechem. And similarly, also, if they're soaked in red wine, same thing, it doesn't have the din of bread anymore, so in such cases, you would say mizonis on it. Okay, now I'm going to cash out my talk about the Zakistan, which is a long time.